Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to give you the best of the world of the automobile this morning. Well, just the first thing I want to say is happy Father's Day to everyone. It's a great motorsports day today, and hopefully you're enjoying a wonderful, wonderful Father's Day. Well, the 24 Hours of Le Mans just finished up, and we'll have those results for you as well. We've got IndyCars in St. Louis. We've got Formula One in Canada. We also have NASCAR down in Mexico, so we'll be talking about all of that. Also, a couple great articles about fathers and sons throughout automotive history as well as racing history. And of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, our first article today is from the website for Hagerty, which is the automotive collector and insurance company site. And it says, "The sun also rises, fathers and sons throughout automotive history." Well, on our Father's Day, let's take a look at the sons who took the torches from their fathers in the automotive business. As history shows, a silver spoon in your mouth doesn't always mean success. In fact, trying to follow in daddy's footsteps is often a rocky road. Well, let's start out at the top, Henry and Edsel Ford. Oh, is there a more famous father and son team in the automotive business than Henry Ford and his son Edsel? Founded in 1903 by Henry, and his two previous companies failed. By 1920, the Ford Motor Company produced one out of every two cars on the road in the United States, and Henry Ford accomplished this with just one model, the Ford Model T. Henry eventually bought out the shareholders and installed his son as president. Where Henry loved to tinker, Edsel loved the arts. Henry could engineer a car, Edsel could drape it with a graceful silhouette. Edsel's style can be seen in the 30s and 40-year era's cars, most likely the 1940 Lincoln Continental. As you'd expect, their relationship was a bit unstable. Neither understood each other. This led to the old man trumping his son's decisions and efforts to toughen him up. It didn't work. In 1943, Edsel died of cancer at age 49. Henry once again took the reins at Ford, despite being 80 years old. Edsel's wife, Eleanor, intervened, and 4 years later, their son, Henry the Ford, took over. Henry Ford II took over the company. Kichiro and Shirichiro Toyoda. Well, following his father's advice to seek his own way, Kichiro Toyoda, and that ends with a D, son of Saki Toyoda, founder of the successful Toyota Automatic Loom Works, began experimenting with automaking in 1930. His first car, the AA, was released in 1935, and in 1937, the Toyota, T-O-Y-T-A, motor company was in business. Kichiro was named president in 1941 and would remain at the company if it not were for the recession. When Toyota announced layoffs and workers went on strike, in an effort to settle the strike, Kichiro and top executives tendered their resignation. Kichiro died just 2 years later. Outsiders were brought in to run the company. In 1967, Eiji Toyota, Kichiro's cousin, became president and managing director. And it wasn't until 1983 that Kichiro's son, Shirichiro, joined the company in 1952. Today, he is honorary chairman. Shirichiro's son, Akito, became vice president of Toyota in 2005 and president in 2009. Well, William and Semen Knudsen. Okay, neither William or, unfortunately, his name son, unfortunately named Semen, the are not household names, but had a major influence in the automotive industry. William Big Bill Knudsen, a Danish immigrant, rose through the ranks of the Ford Motor Company to become head of manufacturing and was a key factor in the Model T's success. But disputes with Henry saw Knudsen defect over to General Motors Chevrolet division, and Knudsen rose through the company and became president before leaving for a job in the Roosevelt administration during World War II. Now, his son, Bunky Knudsen, joined GM in 1939, rising to general manager at Pontiac in 1956, and saved the brand from extinction. Promoted to general manager of Chevrolet in 61, continued to rise through the ranks, yet after being passed over for a promotion, he left GM, become president of Ford Motor Company in 1967, completing the circle his father had started. And the only bad news is the job lasted 19 months. Wilhelm and Karl Maybach. Well, Wilhelm Maybach put Mercedes-Benz on the map. As Karl Daimler's chief design engineer, Maybach created the gear wheel transmission, tubular radiator, honeycomb radiator, the first four-cylinder automotive engine. After Daimler's death in 1900, Maybach engineered the first Mercedes car, a car that created the blueprint for the modern automobile. Nevertheless, in 1907, Maybach left Daimler to build a better airship for the Zeppelin company. Now, by 1918, they had renamed a company, had changed to Maybach Moro and GmbH. Wilhelm left the company, putting his son Karl in charge. Karl began exclusively building the expensive Maybach luxury cars in 1922, culminating with the Maybach D12 DS, the world's first car with a V12 engine. Production ended in the 30s, and in 2002, Mercedes-Benz revived the brand with the Model 57 and 62 to challenge the Rolls-Royce and Bentley. Daimler folded the marquee in 2012, and now an S-Class trim level with a longer wheelbase is the same vehicle. Well, Roy Chapman and Roy Chapman Jr., an Olds Works test driver, Roy Chapman Sr., experienced a miserable conditions on the American roads while driving the curved dash Oldsmobiles from Detroit to the New York Auto Show. Took 9 days. Not long after, Chapman left Olds to start the Hudson Motor Company in 1909 with Detroit merchant Joseph Hudson, who supplied the funding. Chapman became the president in 1923 and was also chairman of the board. Now, Chapman's cross-country drive never left his thoughts, led him to establish the Lincoln Highway Association with Henry B. Joy of Packard. The group began building the first American transcontinental highway. His son, Roy Jr., began as a test driver as well, working with Hudson after graduating from Yale, but his career didn't advance until Hudson and Nash Kelvinator merged to form American Motors Corporation in 1954. Chapman rose to become chairman of AMC from 67 to 77, keeping the tiny automaker alive by marketing compact cars such as the Hornet, the Gremlin, and the Pacer. Also acquired the Jeep Corporation from Kaiser Industries in 67, which kept AMC afloat until 1987 when it was sold to the Chrysler Corporation. Well, Chrysler's primary interest? That's right, they wanted the Jeep brand. Ettore and Jean Bugatti. Well, born in Milan to a family of artists, Ettore Bugatti never thought of himself as artistically gifted, so he became an engineer, entering the German auto industry in 1902, apprenticing with bicycles and tricycle manufacturers. He eventually began designing cars and established his own plant in France in 1909. While building competition cars, his road cars became exquisite designs with exceptional performance and quality. Despite saying he had never had the talent that his brother, who was more like Rembrandt, his cars were pure artistry. Now his oldest son, Gianroberto, Jean Bugatti, helped his father design some of the most famous marquees, the Bugatti Royale Type 41, the Type 57. Now, Jean was killed in a crash attempting to avoid a cyclist in a Type 57. He was only 30 years old. 8 years later, Ettore died at age 66, but he did not. But the brand did not die after that. Fewer than 8,000 Bugattis were ever produced. The Volkswagen Group revived the marquee in 1998. Ferdinand and Ferry Porsche. Well, of course, it wasn't enough that Ferdinand Porsche developed an electric wheel hub motor, principally used in hybrid cars today, in 1897. He also spent time as the technical director at Daimler developing the legendary SS and SSK models. Next, in 1931, he designed his own design company in Stuttgart and eventually landed the contract to develop the Volkswagen. 3 years later, he also developed with his son, Ferry. After World War II, the father and son built the Porsche sports cars, one based on a Volkswagen, the 1950 Porsche 356. Ferdinand died the following year at age 75. Ferry went on and sustained the motorsports brand through racing and engineering excellence, producing such as cars as the 911, the 914, and the 944. Retiring from the company in 1993, he died just 5 years later. Well, Lloyd and Mark Roos. Like many top executives at General Motors, Lloyd Roos held many positions, starting as an engineer in the late 50s and arriving as the general manager of Buick and at General Motors in 1980. He cultivated a sportier image for Buick with the Grand National, the T-Types, and the Riata. He went on to help manage the Pontiac, Chevrolet, and GM brands in Canada in 1984, added Saturn a year later, and by 1990 he was the president of GM before falling to a boardroom coup in 1992. Now his son Mark, well, he fared just a little better. Like his father, Mark Roos began his career at GM as an engineer, rising through various roles to become president of General Motors in 2009. Today, he's a top executive with the global product development, purchasing, and supply chain, a devoted enthusiast. He unfortunately crashed a 2018 Corvette ZR1 Indy 500 pace car at the Detroit Grand Prix back in 2018. Embarrassing? You bet. He's back on the racetrack, and he is licensed as an IMSA road racer. Yeah, nasty turn. That certainly got the best of him. So those are some famous father and sons through the automotive industry and a part of our Father's Day salute. Well, from the pages of Road and Track, the legendary father and child race car drivers, from the Andretti's to the Unser's, there a rich history of children following their successful fathers into the car cockpits and perfect for Father's Day. Well, number one, there's a good reason we started out with this list. It's the Andretti's. Not only are these Italian-American racing legends alphabetically first, they're perhaps the most famous racing family in the world. The patriarch, Mario, took the Formula One championship in 1978, won class in 1995 at Le Mans, went on to win the Indy 500 in 1969, followed by his son, Michael, who was a star on the kart circuit and also ran in F1. He also took the kart title, which is IndyCar, in 1991. And the lineage continues with their grandson, Marco, who drives in sports cars and in IndyCar. Well, Dale Earnhardt and Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Sr. Well, the late, great Dale Earnhardt, a.k.a. the Intimidator, is one of the most successful NASCAR drivers of all time, winning 76 NASCAR Cup races during his career. Dale won 7 Winston Cup championships, and achievements only matched by Richard Petty and Jimmy Johnson. His son was voted the most popular driver 12 different times, which isn't a slouch behind the wheel. Dale Jr. secured successive Busch Series championships in 98 and 99, and has also won the Daytona 500 twice in 2004 and 2014. Well, the first family of drag racing, the Forces, John, Ashley, Brittany, and Courtney Force. Well, it's a pretty short list of father-daughter teams in the racing world, but one name stands out above all, the Force family. John has been a dominant force, so to speak, in NHRA drag racing for decades with 143 career wins, and he's got his daughters to follow him up in that situation, and they have all been successful and champion drivers themselves. Alfred and Sterling Moss. Although Alfred raced in the 1924 Indy 500, his best contribution in racing history is his son, Sterling. Sterling raced in Formula One for 10 years, but never took the championship. However, he did win the 1955 Mille Miglia and also set several speed records. Also reached 245 miles an hour on the Bonneville Salt Flats. Sir Sterling Marlin retired from racing in 2011 at the Le Mans Legend Race at the age of 81. Bobby and Graham Rahal. Well, the elder Rahal won the IndyCar Series Championship twice, and his son Graham was born with an achievement that would intimidate most sons, but not Graham. Also known as the Shadow because he was attached to his dad's hip during races, Graham followed his father into racing at age 10. Graham now drives for his father's IndyCar team, and he is married to Courtney Force. That's right, John Force's daughter. Nigel, Greg, and Leo Mansell. One of the best British-sounding names in racing history, Nigel Mansell is known as a world-class driver, ranking alongside Michael Schumacher and Ayrton Senna as some of the F1 greats. He also won the 1992 World Championship in Formula One and then switched to IndyCar and won the IndyCar title in 1993. Well, Buck and Buddy Baker. Buck Baker started his NASCAR career in the late 40s, but never really hit his stride until the 50s, finishing first in the 56 and 57 seasons, earning 46 wins over a 26-year career, which landed him into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. His son, Buck's son, Buddy, or better known as Leadfoot, as they called him in the industry, spent 33 years in the Sprint Cup Series, taking the checkered flag 19 times, and he also won the Daytona 500. We have Big Al and Little Al Unser. For the Unser family, you know, winning comes naturally. Big Al won the Indy 500 four times, including back-to-back in 70 and 71, and took home the 1970 USAC National Championship, as well as two IndyCar Championship Series. His brother Bobby won Indy three times, and his son Al Jr. was racing sprint cars at age 11 and has won two Indy 500s, as well as two kart championships. And last but not least, how about the Petties, Lee, Richard, and Maurice? Lee Petty is a member of the NASCAR Hall of Fame and the International Motorsports Hall of Fame, and his contributions to NASCAR cannot be overlooked, and won the first ever Daytona 500 in 1959. Lee's two boys, Maurice and Richard, served the family name well. Maurice raced as a kid, but occasionally as an adult. But his brother, Richard, 200 race wins, seven records, as well as Daytona 500 wins. He is known as the King, and he is also a member of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Flores of Le Mans just finished up, and a record win as Ferrari wins again for the third year in a row, but this time it was the privateer Ferrari team, not the factory back team, the car number 83 with Robert Kubica at the helm. At the end of the race, we had Porsche finish in second, backed by the Penske group. So Ferrari first, second, and then the two factory Ferrari teams finished in third and fourth. And of course, because I'm a Corvette owner now, sold my Mustang during the week. Corvette finished third in class at Le Mans, and a wonderful race, no rain and no really horrible accidents as well. Well, some quick update news from last week, where NASCAR was racing up in Michigan and Denny Hamlin won the race, followed by Chris Buescher, Ty Gibbs, Bubba Wallace, and Kyle Larson, rounding out the top five. One of the things I love about Denny is during his interview, he says to the crowd, "I beat your favorite driver," and then the crowd kind of gives him a boo, and of course the announcer said, "Well, which one would be that?" And Denny says, "All of them." So love it. Denny Hamlin wins the race last weekend up in Michigan. Well, NASCAR is down in Mexico this weekend, and they are racing at the famous Hermanos Rodriguez track for the Viva Mexico 250. And Shane Van Gisbergen is on the pole. Ryan Priest is starting in second. Ross Chastain will start in third. And fourth will be Ty Gibbs. Michael McDowell is starting in fifth, and Kyle Larson in sixth. And that race is going to be starting shortly, and that is going to be on Prime. It's not going to be on regular broadcast TV. That is going to be on Amazon Prime. And I'll have those results for you next weekend. Sports extravaganza for Father's Day continues this evening. Starting at 5 o'clock will be the IndyCar race from Worldwide Technology Raceway, which is just outside of St. Louis for the IndyCars. And Will Power is going to start on the pole, Scott McLaughlin in second. Those are both Penske cars. Pato O'Ward, one of my favorite drivers, will start third. And David Malukas will start in fourth. And Malukas drives for AJ Foyt Racing. Like I said, that race is going to be on Fox broadcast starting at 5 o'clock this afternoon. And, of course, I'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, to round out the day, so we started out with the 24 Hours of Le Mans this morning. Right now, the Formula One race is ongoing, so if you want to check in on that after the car show, that is over on ABC. And speaking of Formula One, George Russell sneaks away the pole position for the race starting today. Max Verstappen will start in second, Oscar Piastri in third, Kimi Antonelli will start in fourth, and Lewis Hamilton will start in fifth. Very big story was the fact that everybody thought the McLaren cars would be one and two. Lando Norris starting all the way in the seventh position. And I'll have those results from Canada for you next weekend as well. for some weird and unusual automotive news, and it's from the pages of The Drive. This is some weird guy's car collection or an insurance fraud dumping ground. So sometimes you watch YouTube videos that leave you scratching your head. And we found some scenario that served from a clip called Exploring with Josh, a creator with an infinity of abandoned places. In this video, he's checking out a neglected American property that is currently home to an incredibly diverse collection of automobiles of varying ages, with this eccentric abandoned collection or simply a dumping ground for local fraudsters. Well, Josh dedicates quite a bit of the video to telling the story of the home's last reported occupant, but the details are vague given his penchant for exaggeration. So I suggest taking the narrative with a grain of salt. Actually, exploration is we're going to find some of the good stuff. And by the good stuff, I mean like weird stuff. There's at least two vintage Alphas on the property, potentially a third lurking beneath a car cover, along with an old Nissan Stanza, a well-kept Lotus, garage-kept Lotus Esprit. And in storage, there's a rather clean Honda CB750 motorcycle. Now, if it stopped there, it would be reasonable write-off, but why not? How about Volvo V50, a Buick Regal X Tour X, which counts as a European wagon? Oh, and don't forget there's a 981 Boxster with bald tires, a Nissan or a Mazda Miata also as well. So the host notes that the Miata's presence suggests that someone else has lived here. He suggests the property just sat in a state for about 8 years. If he's correct, that technically would put the last year of the market being the 2016 model vehicles. So weird but true, and this is somewhere in beautiful Pennsylvania. Talk gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Well, after that long road trip and seeing some pretty inexpensive gas prices, some of the gas prices in Metro Phoenix were a little bit more of a shock before I left. So, all right. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.13 a gallon, and that's not bad. It's been pretty stable. Arizona right now, average gas price for the state is $3.24. Our friends in Utah at $3.27. Over in Colorado, $3.07. In New Mexico, $2.88. As we head east, Texas, $2.73, $2.74 in Oklahoma. And as we head back to the west, Nevada, $3.79. And for our poor friends over in California, for their gas prices, $4.65 is the average gas price. Which in Alaska at $3.65, you would think, the transportation. And then when we look at right now, average gas price for California, it is the most expensive in the West. Now, if you're lucky enough to live in Sierra Vista, at least regarding gas prices, you can get a gallon of gas at the Circle K on Rainbow Way for $2.45. It's also the Circle K on 7th Street and the Circle K on Garden Avenue, all at $2.45. Huachuca City, well, $2.45 as well. How about this? The Costco in Gilbert. Oh, set the alarm on this. Costco in Gilbert is saying $2.49. That's an incredible price. So that could be the winner when it comes to the Valley gas prices. So stand by. Let's see what the rest of the prices here are in Metro Phoenix for our gas. No promotion they're doing, but that's a dramatic price difference than anybody else's. Right now, the next cheapest gas in the city is at the Circle K on Grand Avenue in Surprise, and that's $2.95. The Sam's Club in Chandler at $2.96, and the Costco's on Oak, Elliott, and those are $2.99. And the Sinclair Station, how about this, on West Indian School is at $2.99 as well. But yeah, so if you happen to live down in the East Valley, wow, and you have a Costco card, $2.49 a gallon at Costco. All right, let's take a quick crossing of the globe and talk about world gas prices. Right now, Libya, Iran, and Venezuela, not three great countries that I would want to spend a bunch of time in right now. Gas prices all under 15 cents a gallon. Egypt, $1.45. In Qatar, you can get gas for $2 a gallon. Saudi Arabia, you would think it'd be really cheap there, $2.35. In Sudan, $2.65. How about this? Vietnam, you can get gas for $2.65. $2.92. Russia, $2.96. If you happen to be down in Honduras, gas is $2.83. And then we start heading out to some of the islands in Fiji. Gas prices is $2.35 a gallon. Jamaica, $4.59. Let's take a look. Oh, how about this? Ukraine, $5.13. If you happen to be in Romania, $6 a gallon will get you some gas. Belize, $6.50. Portugal, $7.26. In Italy, $7.33 a gallon. Singapore, $8 a gallon. Israel, $8 a gallon. Iceland, $9.12. And Hong Kong, the most expensive gas in the world at $13 a gallon. Time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, our new Toyota Tundra uses all the available space in our garage. If I want to close the garage door, I have to literally pull within inches of the front wall. There's a problem. The automatic brake system continually hits the brakes every time I approach the wall, even though I'm creeping at 1 mile an hour. Is there a danger of repeatedly using the auto brake system activated when I park the car? Will this damage the brakes? And that's from Dan. Well, no, but it might damage your neck, Dan. And for those of you who don't have this feature, a lot of new cars have an automatic emergency braking. Car sensors conclude that that obstacle ahead of you, a stopped car, for instance, you haven't given you any indication that you're aware of it by taking your foot off the gas or hitting the brakes, the automatic braking system kicks in. As a first step, the vehicle will issue an audible warning or a visual warning, and then will, as you continue to browse your wife's sister's Instagram photos, as the obstacle gets closer, will actually apply the brakes for you. Many cars and trucks also have a slow speed version of this system used for parking. So this can be incredibly useful, but it also can be incredibly irritating, as you found, Dan. So your vehicle and others will allow you to turn off the slow speed auto brake feature in situations where you'd rather it mind its own business. Now, on the Tundra, there's a button on the left of the steering wheel with an image of a car making an impact with a traffic cone with the word off underneath it. When you pull into your garage, just press that button. An orange light with the same image will show up on your dashboard, letting you know that the system is off. You'll still hear the audio warning when the sensors detect a nearby obstacle, like the garage wall, but the truck will not apply its own brakes. Once the light is off, you're free to drive into your own radial arm saw in that same garage. Now, it's also useful for going through the car wash. Just keep in mind, most vehicles will reset to the on position when you restart, but you'll have to hit the button every time you want to pull in the garage. But that's better than getting whiplash, right? Good luck. That's a really cool feature, and I could see how that could be very frustrating. I have the same situation with my Toyota Tacoma. If I want to park it in the garage, I have to get within inches of the garage wall. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.